on today's show.
1/5 of the world's population lives in India, but only 1/5,000th of the world's cross-cultural missionaries serve amongst unreached people groups in India. So you're getting a sense of what this book is encouraging us to do. It's written with such passion and zeal and courage and conviction and commitment. You just kind of read it and feel quite inspired and motivated and dare I say it, mobilized just by reading it. I mean, I wish the same were true of all mission books. So it is wonderful book. It's very diverse. It's got Latin American voices, Asian, African voices. So we're looking into what God is doing across the world and through the global church with unreached people groups. Lovely book. Highly recommended.
Stay tuned. Greetings and welcome to the Missions Podcast, the show that explores your hard questions on missions, theology, and practice to help goers think and thinkers go. I'm Alex Kochman, Director of Communications and Engagement with ABWE, joined once again for another excursion into the world of missiology. Scott W. Dunford, pastor of Western Hills Church in San Mateo, California, and returning to the show this week for the 3rd year in a row is Chris Howells, who, Chris, I'm not sure how to properly identify your title right now. We'll let Scott give you a better introduction than my attempt to stumble through it. But Chris returns to the show to lead us through a conversation we have each year about what you should be reading and what should be on your bookshelf if you're someone who cares about the mission of God in the world. Before we dive into all of that, if you would be so kind as to leave this show a positive rating and review in your platform of choice, that will help appease the angry algorithmic gods, which we know we should always be making sacrifices to them. That's good and biblical and orthodox, I'm told. But also, as we enter a new year, we want to hear from you. What issues are you facing in your ministries, in your churches, in your wrestling with scripture and the culture around you? And let's dive in deep to those problems. Email alex@missionspodcast.com or scott@missionspodcast.com. And we want to hear your suggestions of topics we should cover in the year ahead. And so we look forward to hearing more of those. But Scott, let me kick it to you, first of all, to give our friend Chris a proper introduction. And secondly, let's see, we had 10 book recommendations last year from Chris, Scott. So of those 10, how many have you read?
Oh, I can't even remember. Why'd you do that to me?
Too many to count. I can say I'm working on one.
Read them. I own them. But no, I haven't read them. Alex will appreciate that reference.
Michael Scott.
To the American office, which I feel is the superior office. But let's not get into those kind of things. We could talk about Anglicanism and Baptist. We could talk about which office we prefer. We could even talk about which beetle we prefer, Chris. But I would rather talk about missiology. And so it's good to bring on our old friend, and I feel like one of my best friends I've never met in person, Chris Howells. He is the director of cross-cultural training at Oak Hill College in the UK, formerly serving in Uganda as a missionary with his wife and family for many years. Also, I think many of us got to know Chris through his work on From Every Nation, which is kind of a collection of all the things that are happening in missions writing and thinking and podcasts. And I think that's how we got to know him, because he kept saying nice things about our podcast, which probably discredits him in some circles. But Chris, we're so glad to have you. Welcome back to the show. And we are excited to dive into books that we should be reading about missions in 2025.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Alex. If you want to cancel the missiology books thing and just talk about the Beatles, I'll happily do that. You know, Paul McCartney,
I'll happily log off.
Paul McCartney is playing live about 8 miles from where I sit at this very minute as we record this. So I hope you appreciate the sacrifices I am making to appear on this podcast instead of singing along with Hey Jude.
Well, man, you know, suffering in the missionary life is normative, and we all have our crosses to bear, Chris.
I couldn't get tickets. That's another reason. But anyway, you know, very happy to be with you both in place of Paul McCartney. Nice to be back. 3rd time on the show. You keep inviting me, so this is on you, not me.
it's definitely on us, and it's our privilege. So thank you so much. So let's get into it. Last year, we went through 10 books. I don't have the books in front of me. We probably should have gone back and had that list of those 10 books.
Show notes. They're in the show notes.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forget about the power of the internet.
Right down there.
Yeah, so you can just see them. We had this all prepared ahead of time perfectly. But Chris, I'm always excited to see what books you're putting out in front of us. Usually it's a smattering of some old and some new, some things that we would find full agreement in and others that are going to challenge us and maybe even cause us to disagree. But it's important for us to know what's happening in the world of missiology. So Chris, start us off. What is our first book recommendation for 2025?
Yeah, that's right. So just as I come to the first one, I guess in a sense, these next 10 are just in addition to the previous 10 of last year and the 10 before that of 2023, was it? And so in a sense, we're just building up a library to sit on our shelf and even be read one day of books that will give you a diverse and rich diet.
We're honest about it.
Of strong missiology. And as you say, these books don't even agree with each other. So it's not that we have to agree with everything, but I think we will be helped by each of them. The first book is called Sending Church Applied. I'll hold it up for those who are watching on YouTube. I appreciate that doesn't help your podcast listeners very much. Last year, I recommended one of the 10 was Sending Church Defined by Bradley Bell. Now, this is the follow-up, Sending Church Applied. Mm-hmm. And it is Bradley joined by three colleagues of his from Upstream Collective, Mike Easton, Larry McCurry, and Nathan Sloan, who you've had on the show. These are four tremendously talented authors. Their writing is clear and concise. And the book is basically built around 17 elements of what a sending church involves. So it's trying to spell out, practically speaking, what does it look like to be a sending church? So there's a chapter on cultivating missions awareness, on identifying missionaries, on commissioning missionaries. That's not often something we think about. And a chapter right at the end, actually, about inviting missionary influences back into our church. So Bradley Bell writes that chapter, and he speaks of how Barnabas and Paul came back to Antioch after 18 months on their first missionary journey. And then, according to Luke, spent, quote, a long time with the disciples back there in Antioch, which was, in a sense, their sending church. And one can only imagine what it must have been like as Barnabas and Paul reported back all that God had done, all that they'd seen and heard amongst the Gentiles, the nations. And I just wonder what sort of cross-cultural, boundary-crossing, dividing wall breaking impact that had on the Antioch church. And so that's just one chapter trying to bring out the idea that missionaries can have an influence back into their home churches as part of a kind of ongoing mobilization process. One suggestion is that church leaders ask the missionaries, perhaps in an interview setting in a service, ask, what word of exhortation do you have for us? That's a great way to invite a kind of reproducing, multiplying missionary influence into our church life. That's just one of the 17 chapters. It's such a practical, helpful book. I've actually helped our students at the college where I work here in London, Oak Hill, to we've been buying copies to give out to every student at the college here as a Christmas gift for them. So we are putting our money where our mouth is, and I recommend very much that your listeners do the same.
Upstream Collective's putting out a lot of great content. Honestly, it's too much to keep up with for one small person with a small brain like myself. But Chris, what do you have next on the list?
So the next one is another book. That previous book was from 2024, as is this one, called People Vision, Reimagining Mission to Least Reached Peoples. It's an edited volume. It's a lovely book. My one quibble is it doesn't fit on the shelf. It's not the same size as any other book I own. So it just kind of just stands out on yourself. Maybe they mean to do that. But otherwise, apart from that, it is an excellent book. It's about 300 pages and about 40 chapters. So each chapter is just a handful of pages. I wonder if it could be a kind of one chapter a day kind of read. But it is basically about the missiology and missions practice of people group missions and reaching unreached groups. Now, for many years, I sort of had this vague, it was kind of in the atmosphere, this phrase, unreached people groups. I just presumed it meant sort of this vague sense of people that don't really know Jesus yet. But actually, it's so much more than that. It is a kind of a strategy and an understanding, a whole way of thinking, really, of what God is calling the church to. So there's chapters in this book on what is meant by people groups, where does this kind of people group approach come from, how to define unreached peoples. It's very rare to find two missiologists who will agree on that one. How can we best pray and mobilize for unreached people groups? What's going on in the world today about unreached people groups? It's full of stats and facts. Got a couple for you here, gentlemen. So, okay, I'll tell you what, I have a guess. Let's have a little quiz. What percentage, Scott and Alex, go on, you can have one guess each. What percentage of the world's population live in unreached people groups? So defined as a group that is less than 2% evangelical, less than 5% professing Christian. So what percentage of the world's population live currently in an unreached people group? Go on, Alex.
I'm guessing 35%.
It's not bad at all, Scott.
I think I know the number, but I'm second guessing.
I mean,
myself.
There's a whole ministry called One Third of Us. So,
I was going to say 51%.
Do you know, you can almost split the difference. So, according to this book, I mean, it slightly depends how you define it, but 40% of the world's population, 97% of them are in people groups that consist of majority Muslim or Hindu people. And 1 billion people who live in UPGs, unreached people groups, live in just one country. Can you guess what country we're referring to?
India.
Yeah. A fifth of the world's population lives in India, but only a 5,000th of the world's cross-cultural missionaries serve amongst unreached people groups in India. Anyway, I don't want to flood you with too many stats, but you're getting a sense
it's
of
so helpful,
what
though,
this
yeah.
book is encouraging us to do. It's got this incredible, it's written with such passion and zeal and courage and conviction and commitment. You just kind of read it and feel quite inspired and motivated and dare I say it, mobilized just by reading it. I mean, I wish the same were true of all mission books. So it is wonderful book. It's very diverse. It's got Latin American voices, Asian, African voices. So we're looking into what God is doing across the world and through the global church with unreached people groups, not just a kind of wealthy Americans or Europeans. So lovely book, highly recommended.
Wonderful. So what do you have next? Book number three.
The third book is another book from this year. What a fruitful missiology year 2024 has been. So this book is called Africa Bears Witness, Mission Theology and Praxis in the 21st Century. It's another edited volume, actually, edited by a friend of mine, Harvey Kwayani, who's a Malawian-born missiologist who's lived and worked in Europe and now the UK for many years. It's a collection of essays, almost all of them by African heritage believers. And it's about mission.
So it's not about African bears doing evangelism, just to be clear.
It is not. So Africa Bears Witness. It is not that. That's another book yet to be written. It's got your name on it, Alex.
All right.
This one is about mission in, from, to, for Africa and also Africans in the global diaspora. So did you know, gentlemen, that of the next billion babies to be born, get this, over half will be born in Africa. That's a stat, isn't it? North America and Europe combined will produce about 6% of the next billion babies to be born. Africa over half. Over two-thirds of the projected growth of Christianity in this next generation will be African Christian growth. So you're sort of seeing in those two stats a sense of the trajectory of global Christianity becoming increasingly African, and therefore the trajectory of global mission becoming sort of increasingly African. And so this book is really written to and from and for that context, helping all of us, whether living in Africa, serving in Africa, or just interested in what the Lord is doing around the world, helping all of us to understand better. And actually, just quickly, gents, there's a chapter as well about African mission in a diaspora context around the world. And there's an extraordinary stat, one more for you. Did you know that 14% of London's population is Black? So that could be first or second or third generation African or Afro-Caribbean. That's 14%. But you know what percentage of churchgoers on a Sunday are Black? 60%.
Wow.
From 14% of London's population. So, I mean, that's astonishing, isn't it? And it just shows the extent to which London, which is possibly the world's first de-secularizing city, becoming less secular rather than more, as so many global, particularly Western cities are. And that is being driven through largely African immigration. So it's an astonishing book. It is rich. It is huge in its size and scope of what it's trying to do. And I think those who are interested to learn more about what God is up to in the world would do well and benefit from reading it.
It causes you to reflect not only on what God's doing in Africa, but also on just the tremendously low birth rates among so many of the developed nations, which, you know, that's a discipleship problem, right? That people are assuming things about modernity that lead to fruitlessness. And the gospel changes that way of thinking for sure. But Chris, what do you have next? Coming in at number, what are we on, seven?
No, six. It may feel like that, Alex. I think it's number four.
Well, no, are we counting down or counting up? That's the question. I was counting down.
Do you know, there is literally no order to this. Just before we started recording,
we're going to make it a countdown.
It's not a countdown. I would annoy too many people if I do that. Stop.
So we're going to make it a countdown.
Alex, I know you revel in causing trouble, but please, not for me. This is not a countdown. Everyone, every book is equal in this panorama of mythology books. So the fourth book we're going to look at, actually, this is a different one. So if you take all 30 of the books over this past 3 years that we're talking about, this one is quite unique in that it is, I guess, in a sense, a kid's book. Not sort of strictly speaking. So this is called Window on the World. It's from 2018. I think it's our oldest book, actually, on today's list. It's a resource that comes from the Operation World team. Many of your listeners will be familiar with Operation World. It's a well-known kind of prayer guide for every country on earth. And in a sense, this is kind of Operation World, but for kids, all right? It's kind of a global prayer guide for little people. We use it with our gang. We've got three kids aged 15 to 10, and we've been using this since they were pretty little. It's great. So there's 90 chapters, but each chapter is just a double page spread. So, and each double page spread is basically about either a country in the world or a people group in the world that has huge gospel needs and opportunities. But this book isn't really based around stats. I mean, most kids aren't really into mission stats. I mean, actually, let's face it, most adults aren't really into mission stats. It's based on stories. So each double page spread is based around a story of someone, usually a kid from that culture, from that country, from that group, what their life is like, what their religious beliefs are like. What might it look like and feel like for them to hear about Jesus and believe in him and live for him? And then at the end of each double page spread, there's a few suggestions for how we might pray for that particular place or people. It is such a fun way to get kids thinking and praying for gospel needs around the world, and actually adults too. So we use it not every night. It might get a little bit sort of overwhelming if you use it night after night after night, but we try and do it once every week or few weeks. And it just keeps feeding our kids this sense of the needs that are there around the world. And I think that can only be a good thing.
Well, I love that, because so much of even, you know, my love of missions came as a kid, reading missionary biographies and hearing missionary stories and going to vacation Bible school. And they always had the big picture missionary stories. So, you know, find out what happens next in the life of Amy Carmichael or Hudson Taylor or whoever that might be. And so I love getting resources into the hands of our kids that kept them think globally at a young age. That's awesome. So now we're down to five by my reckoning, but by Alex's reckoning, Also five.
Broken clock is right twice an episode or something.
That's right.
So this book is called People on the Move. The principal author is Sam George. It's released from and through the Lausanne Movement, which many of your listeners will be familiar with. And you had an episode on that a few weeks ago. So Lausanne releases quite regularly a kind of report into some aspect of God's mission in the world today. And this one, People on the Move, I mean, the clue's in the title, isn't it? This one is a report about migration in the world today and how mission and migration intersect and interrelate in a myriad of different ways. In fact, the keen eyed or eared listeners amongst you all will remember that actually in all three of these lists now, I've put in a book about migration. So this is the third I've recommended. Why? That's not an accident. It's because migration is such a fundamental trend and feature of the world that we live in and of the 21st century. 280 million people, Scott and Alex, currently live in a country outside of their birth. But the UN estimate that by 2050, which is not that long to go, is it really, in the grand scheme of things, by 2050, that number could go up to 1.2 billion. Which is astonishing, isn't it? And even if they're, you know, even if it's just half that, 600 million, that's still well over doubling of the current number in just the next 2 to 3 decades. So we really are living in an unparalleled, unprecedented age of migration in terms of size and scope of that trend. Now, this book is actually just 80 pages long, and it's got pretty big writing. So it's not the longest book you'll ever read. It's fairly readable and digestible. For me, the best section, actually, gentlemen, is the last few pages where Sam George, who I really admire and appreciate as a missiologist and a really wonderful thinker, particularly around this issue of migration. What he does in the last few pages, he just starts to craft a theology of migration, trying to understand what does it mean to say that God, in a sense, is on the move. He uses this Latin expression, motus Dei, God on the move. I'm actually just going to read a quote for you, if I may. It's a fairly kind of hefty quote in terms of its implications. But, you know, I've heard rumors that this is a podcast for goers who think, and what is it, thinkers who go?
So, it's just a rumor. It's just a rumor.
Well, you know, if we are aiming at thinking, here's a quote to get us thinking. You ready? So, quote, God of the Bible is a missionary God because God is always on the move. The divine attributes of omnipresence, immutability, and impassibility should not lead us in the direction of viewing God as rigid, static, immovable, stationary, or sedentary. God of the Bible is a moving being, and Jesus is a universal savior, not a territorial deity. The spirit of the living God is at work and moving everywhere. The mission of God is to the ends of the earth, crossing cultures, geographies, and peoples all over the world. And get this, all static conceptions of gods are idolatrous. So, and in the next few pages, Sam George really tries to sort of exegete that idea. What does it mean that actually people on the move is not just some sort of accidental quirk of a rather volatile age we live in, but it's actually something fundamental to the redemptive plotline of God, both in the Bible, but also throughout history, and perhaps none more so than in this current age. I think there are a few more important topics for us in missiology and missions thinking to be reckoning with today. So highly recommended.
Would Darren Carlson approve of this book?
Do you know, I spent some wonderful afternoons with our dear brother, Darren Carlson, at the Lausanne Congress in Seoul in South Korea a few months ago. He received a copy of this book then, as I did. And I'm hesitant to speak for such a great man, but I suspect he would enjoy and appreciate this book greatly. Yeah,
I love to speak for Darren all the time, so that's great. I'm glad you have more restraint than I do. That's good.
Yeah, Scott has no restraint because I've tried to talk twice and he keeps talking over me.
Well, you know, I usually is the other way around. So this is just a, you know, good for you to kind of understand what I go through.
That's what I had to say. I do think, though, Chris, hundreds of years from now, people will be looking back and wondering what God was doing through this age of mass migration. It's not just on the U.S. southern border, as our U.S. listeners might be tempted to think. It is everywhere. It's from everywhere to everywhere. And whether that's caused by factors of globalism or economic uncertainty, there's all sorts of factors. And it's going to take generations of historians to untangle all of that. So really interesting to see the first entree in that direction from a missiological perspective. So we're either next on 4 or 6, depending whether we're counting up or down. Or if you just want to be completely egalitarian about it, we're just on the next one, whatever that is.
If you're a thinker or if you're a goer, that's the distinguishing factor there.
I'm just going to keep going until you cut me off. The next book is called Knowing God to Make Him Known, Living Out the Attributes of God Cross-Culturally. So this is from 3 years ago, 2021. I might pronounce his name wrong. Ed Schuerman.
From across the river here, from Lancaster Bible College. He brings a group to ABWE every year for a tour of our facilities. ABWE has benefited greatly from Dr. Ed.
I'm so pleased to hear that. I have benefited greatly from Dr. Ed simply through reading this book. The book is basically in 4 sections, kind of pre-field, departure, entry, and kind of on-field ministry, and then finally return. And each section has 3 or 4 chapters covering the sorts of things that go on in those stages of the typical kind of cross-cultural missionary life. Now, so far, so good. You may be thinking, yeah, that sounds kind of fairly run-of-the-mill for a missions book. But you see, here's the rub, gentlemen. Each chapter is based around a particular attribute of God. So Ed explores that attribute biblically and pastorally and applies it to some aspects of missionary service. So let me give you an example to help work out what this means. So for example, the first chapter, which is thinking about what a call to cross-cultural missionary service looks like, Ed bases that chapter on God's sovereignty. There's a chapter he writes about arriving and the kind of culture shock and culture stress and uncertainty that can come with that crossing cultures. And he bases that chapter on the doctrine of God's immutability, God being unchanging, and how that can bring a sense of sort of stability and peace when everything else feels like it's being thrown up in the air. In the chapter about church planting, he bases that chapter on God's omnipotence and how God is all powerful and will build his church and the kind of security that gives church planters in cross-cultural mission contexts as they go about in that work. And so it's really integrating together sort of thinking and going. Again, it's hitting this podcast sweet spot. And I reckon it would be a great gift for perhaps a church pastor or a missions committee to give to someone who is considering overseas or cross-cultural gospel ministry, because it is going over many of the sort of basics of the missionary journey, so to speak, and yet actually rooting it in God's unchanging and glorious character, his attributes. And of course, that is exactly how to do it.
Fantastic.
Can I talk? I can talk. Okay, good. Scott's got... Chris, you're... I'm sorry. I'm just messing
with
you.
Our listeners are dying, Alex. They're like, wow, Alex is asking to talk? What's going on here?
I'm just kidding. We'll edit that part out. Chris, our next book...
So the next book, Why Evangelical Theology Needs the Global Church by Stephen Pardew. This came out last year. That's quite a title, isn't it? That's a sort of headline grabbing title. And actually, the opening line of the book captures it. Let me just read you the opening line. What difference does it make for the practice of evangelical theology that the church is no longer primarily rooted in North America and Europe, but increasingly comprises people from an astonishing variety of cultures and nations? Now, your listeners don't need me to tell them that the center of gravity of Christianity has shifted. So that point on the Earth's surface that has an equal number of Christians to the north of it, the south of it, the east of it, and to the west of it, that, you know, that point is not in Austria anymore, as it was at the time of the Reformation. Mm-hmm. It's not in Italy, as it was at the time when William Carey left for India. It's not in Spain, as it was during the time of the famous 1910 Edinburgh World Missionary Conference. No, that center of gravity, geographically speaking, of Christianity worldwide right now is actually in Mali, in West Africa, not far from Timbuktu, interestingly. Over 80% of the world's evangelicals now reside in the majority world, the global south. And what Pardew is trying to do in this book as a theologian, a globally minded theologian, is read and consider and reckon with the vast amount of insightful theological work emerging from evangelical scholars in the majority world and bring that work into dialogue with more kind of established or well-known theological expressions in the West in order to think through what does it look like to foster and cultivate a richer, more kind of dynamic theological appreciation of God and his word and his work and his will in the world today. So one very brief example, gentlemen, in one chapter, Pardew looks at global theological expression to consider what does a healthy recognition of culture and contextuality look like as we think about our own theology. So traditionally, and I know this is a generalization, evangelicals have been quite suspicious of thinking about how all of our theologizing is fundamentally in and from and for a context, whether we recognize that or not. And so what Pardew tries to do is kind of recognize that. And whilst retaining a complete commitment to the authority and inerrancy of scripture, he's attentive to that once for all nature of the gospel, but he takes advantage of all the diverse cultural gifts that God has given his people around the globe, brings these theologies into dialogue. And really, it is for the enrichment and the benefit and blessing of all of us. It's quite a hard book to kind of describe in just, you know, a couple of minutes. But I think for those who are wanting to think through more, what does it look like for us to think and act and theologize and missiologized, to exploit a word there, globally, in dialogue mm-hmm. with this rich wealth of non-Western Christian voices that we have at our fingertips today. This is a really good book to start that.
Listeners, stay tuned, because we need your help. A quick question for you first, though. Benjamin and Kwanisha are going to serve as missionaries in Zambia, focused on training Zambians for ministry. That's number one. Number two, D and C, we're just going to give you their initials, are focused on evangelizing unengaged people groups in the Arab world. That's number two. Number three, Joel and Misty are preparing to engage in discipleship ministry in Japan. So here's the question. What do these three very different sets of gospel workers have in common? It's this. All three families are on pre-field ministry with ABWE right now. They're still looking for prayer partners and financial supporters to join them before they can hit the ground running on the mission field. We have a special opportunity as a missions podcast listening community to be a blessing to the more than 100 missionaries with ABWE who are training to get to the field. So do me a favor. Log on to abwe.org/prefield. All one word, abwe.org/prefield. Browse the catalog and find one pre-field missionary or family to pray for. Click on their page, think about them, pray that the Lord would bless them and provide for them, and then consider if the Lord would lead you to give to that missionary. Again, go to abwe.org/prefield to pray and support these workers in training. Let's be a blessing to them. Let's get these missionaries to the field and send them in a manner worthy of God. Thank you. Next on your list, Chris.
Next on the list, I think there are three remaining, but stop me when you need to. I'll just keep on going. In fact, I could turn the camera around on my laptop camera here, and I could show you four very large, very long bookshelves with hundreds of books on them, all about missiology and all with wonderful things to bring. So honestly, I'll go all night. Just stop me. So the next book, let me hold it up here for YouTube viewers. Women in the Mission of the Church, the opportunities, their opportunities and obstacles throughout Christian history. I may pronounce their names wrong, forgive me, but the authors are Leanne Zubinski and Aneke Stassen. So it's just about over 200 pages. It's kind of scholarly, but not inaccessibly so. It's serious, but it's not indecipherable in the slightest. It is meticulously well-researched, and it's basically taking a wide-angle lens on Christian mission history. It's structured chronologically, so a couple of chapters on women in the early church, their roles as martyrs, as widows, as scholars, as missionaries and deacons, as other things, and then a few more chapters on women in late antiquity, in the Middle Ages, women as empresses and queens and nuns, mystics, and other kind of medieval roles. And then quite a substantial section on women since the Reformation, women as activists, as evangelists, as denominational missionaries and preachers and other such roles. It's actually a really good way just to learn about church history and missions history more generally. I mean, a slight quibble. I think they define mission quite broadly. It may be better titled a book looking at sort of women in ministry of the church across the ages, but there is a sort of distinct missiological element to it as well. But I do think that we can all enjoy learning about a wider array of important Christian figures. I've no doubt that 99% of wonderful Christian saints through history are lost to us just over the depth of time. Yeah. And what a joy it will be to become acquainted with them in the eternal feasting of the new creation. But until then, Amen. You know, let's get to know that 1% that history has kept for us. And actually, I think many of us only get to know 0.1%. And this book helps us just to get to know a wider array of significant, influential, important, courageous, convicted, zealous, godly women through church history. I enjoyed it, and I suspect many of your readers would too.
There's no limit to the depths of church history, and it's why we spent the last year on this show digging into some heroes from the past, and even with a different theme this upcoming year, there's no limit to the depths that we could plunge there. And your next book recommendation for us, Chris, is...
Well, the next two are again from 2024, so they are hot off the press, wow, so to speak. This next one, How about this? Apologetics in Africa, an introduction by Kevin Morithi and Dreba. So this is a good example of taking a discipline that many of us might consider kind of relatively settled or universal, the idea of apologetics. Many of us will have read or thought about that to some extent. But what this book is doing, or it is the fruits of this action, planting that discipline into kind of an African church soil. Mm. And in a sense, seeing what grows from that. So this book is the fruit of that. What does it look like for Africans to defend and proclaim the gospel in Africa in the context of the many sort of arguments and issues that they are facing there? Now, a substantial number of those arguments and issues will overlap significantly with what we in the West might be, but actually many don't. So one chapter, for example, by a friend of mine, actually, from my Uganda days, Rogers Atwe Bemberere, his chapter looks at cults and false teachers across Africa. Some of your listeners may have heard of a horrendous story over the past couple of years from Southeast Kenya, the deaths of over 400 men, women, and children in a cult, the leader of which demanded people starve themselves to death to hasten the return of Jesus. That story was not hugely hitting the news in the West, but clearly a huge impact on, devastating impact on many families across Kenya and the church across East Africa and Africa more generally. What does it look like to respond to, apologetically respond to some of these dangerous and horrendously damaging cults that are springing up across Africa, as many are in the West too, of course. And so I think this is a wonderful book for Africans to think through what it might look like to think apologetically. There's chapters about African traditional gods, about dowry practices, issues and questions that are facing African believers that may not be facing us in the UK or the US. But actually, I do think many of us in the US and UK would benefit from reading it, even if we're not planning on being in Africa anytime soon. I just think seeing the breadth of global theology, and in this case, kind of an apologetic approach to theology, seeing the breadth of that in action is always beneficial and a blessing. And so just to widen our sense of understanding of how God is at work, what are the issues, and how better to pray for our brothers and sisters in Africa, that would be a really helpful book to turn to.
Scott, didn't we try to line up a podcast with him, with the author? Oh. I think we did,
and I think we... Yeah, I don't want to embarrass him, but I don't think he ever showed up.
I think I'm going to follow up, and we'll try and make it happen again, because without tipping the hand too much, there's some thematic overlap there with what we'd like to emphasize in 2025, right?
Well, yeah, and I just can I just ask a quick question, Chris? Mm. Is it just me, or does it seem like more and more books are being put out on the African situation with theology, apologetics by Africans? Is it just that I'm hearing about more? Or, I mean, you were a missionary in Africa for many years. Is this an effort to see more resources coming out of Africa?
Yeah, I think it is. So a shout out at this point to Langham as publishers who are doing great work in funding and enabling and equipping African sisters and brothers to write and publish. When I was in Uganda, the library was probably about 1% African authored when we first arrived in 2011. It was probably about 5% African authors by the time we left in 2023. We worked really hard to bring in more African authored books into the library there. I don't know whether you'll have time for this. Feel free to edit out if you want, but I'll just say one more thing just quickly. The metaphor I often use, comparison I often use is to my students here in the UK is, can you imagine if our theological library at the college where I live and work here in London was 99% stocked by books and authors from the church in South Korea? No doubt there'd be a tremendous amount of good, godly, wonderful, theologically minded, helpful biblical material there that would be a benefit to us all. But I just suspect there'd be something missing as we read book after book after book written from and for South Korea. I suspect it would just great. It would just wouldn't always scratch where we're itching, theologically speaking. That is often the situation for many of our African brothers and sisters on the continent there, that, you know, filling libraries of Western authored books is by no means a catastrophic thing to do, clearly far from it. But I think it just never quite, my experience from Uganda is it never quite resonates in the way that giving African author books to Ugandan students did. And so there is more and more Africans authoring and publishing. That is of great blessing to the African church. But actually, I think all of us can be enriched by enjoying some of those books. And I'm recommending some of them on these sorts of podcasts. Keep your eye on the Langham website and email list to see more and more of what's coming out from there.
They have put out a lot of interesting titles. Chris, last but not least, because this list is in no particular order, but that brings us to the final title of the episode. Drum roll sound effect here. Chris, what's our final book for this discussion?
Really glad you are emphasizing the last, but in capital letters, not least. Although this might be the least in terms of number of words. It's a small book. Justin Schell, friend of the show, I believe. Yep. This is also a 2024 book. Pretty hot off the press. It's called The Mission of God and the Witness of the Church. It is an award-winning book, no less, acclaimed by the Gospel Coalition, given an award of distinction in the category of missions and the global church. That's something, isn't it? It's only about 100 pages, perhaps a few over. I reckon you could read it perhaps in 3 to 4 hours without skipping too many bits. It's a kind of biblical theology of mission. So I guess what I mean by that is it's kind of tracing the theme of mission through the redemptive storyline of God in the world from Genesis 1. And yes, you heard that right. Genesis 1 as opposed to Genesis 3 or Genesis 12 or Matthew 28. From Genesis 1 all the way through to Revelation 22. And yes, you heard that right. Not to Revelation 21 and the coming of the new heavens and earth, but Revelation 22 all the way through from eternity past to eternity future. The sense of God's missional heart and God's missional work in and through his people. It is short, simple, concise, clear. Justin is a passionate and biblically minded author and speaker. And I think it's a wonderful book to help us to see that mission is a theme that is rich in both the Old Testament and the New, as opposed to just the New, as you can sometimes sort of feel if you're reading some books on mission. But also B is not just a theme that is kind of in a few scattered verses here and there, a few of those kind of picture postcards, kind of poster boy verses of, you know, Matthew 28 and Acts 1. They are deep, rich, fundamental verses which we can all enjoy and benefit from. But actually, the theme of mission is so much deeper in that because, of course, it emanates from the very character and heart of God himself. Where we see God at work, we see God's mission in action. And so Justin draws that out really well from cover to cover of the scriptures. And I think that can help those who are preaching in churches on a regular basis to help them see. You've done podcasts on this in the past, gentlemen, and discussions on this, how all of the scriptures are missionally oriented, how they can be read through a missional lens, so to speak, or a missional hermeneutic is the word that's often applied these days, and how actually in that sense, it's not only our once a year Mission Sunday where the mission of God can be kind of loudly and proudly proclaimed and kind of centered in the life of the church, but actually that drip drip of Sunday by Sunday preaching as we see God's missional purposes in action throughout his redemptive storyline, even up to and including today. And so it's a really helpful book, digestible, clear, and I think a lot of preachers would benefit from it.
And Justin's a good thinker and a friend, but it's the type of book, if you have somebody perhaps in your church who, okay, I get it, missions, yeah, but there's not a passion there, or perhaps it feels like just that extra thing that the church is supposed to do, but, you know, really we don't want to, you know, be extreme or focus on that too much. That would be a great little title to put in their hands to get them to see that, no, God's mission, his working among the nations is one of the central plot lines of scripture and plot lines of our lives today as well. And so you've got some good recommendations there. Now we are at time for this main episode, but Chris, I'm going to put you on the spot real quick. And would you be willing to stay for our premium subscribers and do maybe a final two or three, you know, books that didn't make the cut? Would you be open to doing that?
given that, you know, it's now on records and this is being recorded, I can't say no.
You can't. That's right. So if you are well on done, our Alex. Premium subscribing list, if you are partnering with this ministry at $9.99 per month, you can log on to missionspodcast.com/premium, get access to the bonus episode. You'll hear who didn't make the cut, but there wasn't really a cut to make because, again, it's a non-hierarchical list. But Chris, thank you so much for the breadth of reading and research and your heart to advance solid and engaging missiology across theological perspectives. We appreciate the work that you've been doing. And thank you for joining us here today on the show. Until our next episode, go make disciples of all the nations.